Well, it looks like we have 29 more days before we complete our first complete reading of the Bible, because we've got 6 chapters of Ezra, 13 of Nehemiah, and 10 more of Esther. 6 plus 13 is 19, and 19 plus 10 is 29. So today is April 19th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1522 hours Eastern Daylight Time. So from today, 29 days, well, 30 days should get us to the 19th. So it looks like the 18th of May is maybe when we're going to be done here, if everything goes smoothly. Because there are 30 days in April, so if it were 30 days that we were going to be taking, it would be the 19th of May. So it's only 29 days, and therefore it's May 18th. Wait a minute, that's the same day as the eclipse in the article, isn't it? It's April 19th, and I've given the time 1522 hours in the year 2024 of the Common Era. 1522 Eastern Daylight, now becoming 1523 Eastern Daylight Time. Back to the article. We have this article that we're studying, but we've got this other thing I want to show you first. We've got the Crucible article. We've got this article by Jared Miller. And in this article, he makes this statement. Now, what's the name of the article, first of all, right? But it's called... maybe the title's at the top here. No, the short form of the title is called Amarna Age Chronology, but the beginning of it, okay, that's page 256, the table or the diagram, but we look at this. From 2007, Alt Orientalische Forschungen, volume 34 from 2007, Jared L. Miller, to be specific, or more precise, and the title of the article is Amarna Age Chronology and the Identity of Nibiruria in the Light of a Newly Reconstructed Hittite Text. So the short title is Amarna Age Chronology by Jared Miller. And on page 256, there's a beautiful illustration that shows the conundrum. The previous page, Jared Miller had been saying that if indeed Arma is to be equated with Horemheb, or Horemhab he calls him, but he's the Egyptian pharaoh, Horemheb, if this is the person referred to by Mersili II, the Hittite king, in his document, his own letter that he wrote, I think it's a letter that he wrote to Horemheb, but the details are all contained here in this article, or you can research it to your heart's delight. But Arma is the name used by Mersili II, the king of the Hittites, in referring to Horemheb in his ninth year, that is the ninth year of the Hittite king, Mersili. So in Mersili's ninth year, he calls the Egyptian Arma. Now, if that's Horemheb, is what Jared Miller says, if that's Horemheb, and if that means that Horemheb is not yet the pharaoh, because it implies that he's not, or the document, the article that Jared Miller writes, is saying that he believes from the evidence that Horemheb is not yet the pharaoh in this text, and therefore, if that's true, that means that Horemheb did not become pharaoh until after year 9, or in year 9, one or the other, of Mersili II. So from that, we arrive at this amazing conclusion, which does not... I was wrong yesterday when I said it's true in our chronology, which in fact it is. It's not just true in our chronology. It doesn't matter what chronology you're using, if you accept what Jared Miller writes here. It doesn't matter what your chronology is, even if Tutankhamun reigns for a shorter period of time, or if, you know, I mean, it still works. This argument still holds true that what the conclusion is it must be true that Nibiruria must not be Tutankhamun, and instead must be Akhenaten. So there was a misinterpretation, and it's common. This misconception is common. Everybody in the world has been teaching this wrong teaching about who this person was, referred to as Nibiruria by the Hittite king. And he was the pharaoh, or the pharaoh's widow. Or no, I mean, there was a widow, I should say. There was a widow of this pharaoh, Nibiruria. So Nibiruria is the pharaoh himself. Okay? But he's not Tutankhamun. If he had been Tutankhamun, that would mean that at the time Tutankhamun died, Supaluliuma must still have been alive in this picture here. But Supaluliuma reigns up here, and he dies here in 1330 in this chronology, which is not the same as ours. In our chronology, he dies in 1350. But Mursili begins to reign very shortly after the death of Supaluliuma, with one short reign of one other king, in between. But the ninth year of Mursili is then the point where Horemheb begins to rule, right here, at the death of Aya. But even if Aya ruled, as he does in our chronology, for 7 years or 8 years, and that fits with Manetho, where Manetho says that Aya was the king, Akeres. I mean, Manetho calls him Akeres, but that fits with the name of Ai when we translate, after we translate between the languages, the name Akeres corresponds. I'm trying to find now. Okay, it's over here. Good. I'm looking for the chronology. There it is, I think. It doesn't always respond immediately. There we go. It jumps along the tabs first. Good. So, if we look at this, okay, if this works, of course, we can always have a technological failure, too. Hopefully the technology will sometimes, more than others, it will work. But Akeres, here we go. You see, 8 years for Akeres during Dynasty 18, which is a mass of jumbled mess of numbers, really. We can't say that all these are real kings. They're just different names for the same king in many cases. But Akeres, 8 years would correspond to I, and he ruled for about 8 years. And then we have Horemheb, who we know ruled for about 13 or 14 years. Also, that corresponds to Akeres, 15 years. Then there was a king, in fact, two kings, and then Ramesses. So it corresponds fairly well here with this list of Manetho in the Eusebian version of it. On the right-hand column of Fotheringham, Chronology of the Old Testament, page 122, Dynasty 18. So 8 years is beautiful for the pharaoh named Ai, or Aya. Okay, so if we add 8 years to 1319 in this in the chronology that Mr. Miller uses, we would get 1327, right? That would still be after the death of the date that he has for the date of the death of Supaluliuma. So, yes, yeah, so the death of Tut must have come after the, according to this reasoning, Tut died after the death of Supaluliuma, so his widow, you know, some years after. So his widow obviously couldn't have written to the Hittite king, Supaluliuma. But we know that the widow of Nibiruria, the pharaoh, his widow wrote to Supaluliuma. So he must have been Akhenaten, that pharaoh, and not Tutankhamun. And that's the important thing that was gotten wrong by so many people. That it's just widespread misinformation. But we have to correct it, and we've done that in the genealogy, among the many other things we've done in the genealogy, that's another one of the things that the genealogy gets correct. It appears, and because of correcting that, many other good things happen. As we've been showing, and we're going to see whether we can keep on, you know, expounding it and showing how many more things there are that are good about this chronology. We've got this, also we have this eclipse that we discovered this eclipse from the records of Sennacherib, right? And he was called in the Bible the king even before he became the king, because the Bible was written evidently after Sennacherib became the king, which is only 7 years after the time of the events written about in the Bible. So but by the time he became king, the Bible could have been written sometime after that, and that would then name him as king instead of just military leader, because he had become king. So there's no contradiction. But 704 plus 418 is the year of the beginning of Sennacherib's reign, plus the 418 years that he mentioned, and that gave 1122 the date of just a few years after the eclipse. And now, the eclipse, of course, would be his indication that he should go on a march. And, of course, the siege, there may have been a siege about of the city, of the city of Babylon. And so when he conquered Babylon, it might have taken him a year. So he might have taken, or maybe more than a year. So he might have gone on the siege right after the eclipse, and when the rains were scanty, and then 2 year siege or thereabouts, and then he conquers. So everything fits perfectly well here. Now we want to finish up this paragraph 10.7. Or did we finish it already? No, I think we finished it basically already. But yeah, okay, we said a few more things. It's not much in error. On the contrary, this is a beautiful confirmation of sharp agreement between the crucible of our own reason and fact. This is not the sort of evidence that one hopes for. For a much better hope is found in the hope of everlasting life, the promise of the Bible's own pages, and yet we found it. We don't hope for this kind of eclipse to just jump out of nowhere. I mean, you just could never hope for that, but you would never hope for that sort of thing. You'd rather hope for everlasting life. That's the point there. But, you know, the fact that the Egyptian chronology lines up now that we've got everything correct. I shouldn't say everything, but we've got, now that we've, with the chronology that we have, I mean, with the genealogy, with the iron furnace that we developed in the genealogy for the Egyptian chronology, the Hittite chronology is also set, because it must align with that Egyptian chronology, because they had interactions between the two. So, you know, that makes it also important that this king of Babylon ruled exactly when he did, and which we confirmed by the record of Sennacherib. And so it's all tied together very beautifully. I think that's all we can have time for today, because we've got to talk about some more things that are completely different tomorrow, I think. But that's wonderful. It all ties together. And now I'd like to do our daily scripture, as it suddenly occurs to me. We haven't done that yet. It's right about here. Is it? This thing is jumping around every time I click on something. It wants to select something else. There it is. There we go. Okay, so we are at... I'm not sure where we are, but I'll check briefly here. We still have a fair bit of time, fortunately. The Crucible of Credible Creed. What proverb were we doing? Just checking. We did 1920, I think. Okay, 1920. The Path of the Sluggard. We did that one. Now, 21 and 22 of Proverbs 15 in the Ward Green version from 2004. Little children, here it is. I haven't prepared this. I always think it's sometimes more fun, anyway, to read without preparation. A folly is joy to the lacking of mind, but straight is the walk of the reasoning kind. Where counsel is wanting, go plans unfulfilled, but guidance aplenty is seeing them willed. Wow, so much food for thought in the Proverbs. And then when we have rhyming verse, it just somehow rings out more vividly. I know, I'm not sure if I can remember all of these things without reading it multiple times. But the original scriptures in their you know, translated but not rhyming form is also something you can read. And that may stick in your mind better sometimes. Our reading of the book of Ezra continues now with chapter 5, where we have the confirmation that's very important of the books of the same names, Haggai and Zechariah, those books which we've already been reading. We read in those books that they prophesied in the year 2 of Darius. And when we look at the end of the chapter, Ezra chapter 4, that we read yesterday, the end of that chapter says that the work on the temple in Jerusalem stopped until the second year of the reign of Darius, completely consistent with what it next says in chapter 5, verse 1, which is that Haggai the prophet and Zechariah, the grandson of Iddo, the prophet, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and in Jerusalem, in the name of the God of Israel who was over them. And we know they began in the second year of Darius, according to their own words. So that fits perfectly with what Ezra says. Now, verse 2 of Ezra 5, it was then that Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jehozadak, got up and started to rebuild the house of God which was in Jerusalem. And with them, there were God's prophets giving them aid. At that time, Tattenai, the governor beyond the river, and Shethar-Bozenai, Tattenai, the governor beyond the river, and Shethar-Bozenai, and their colleagues came to them, and this is what they were saying to them. Who put an order through to you to build this house and to finish this beam structure? Then they said to them this, what are the names of the able-bodied men that are building this building? End quote. And the eye of their God proved to be upon the older men of the Jews, and they did not stop them until the report could go to Darius, and then an official document concerning this could be sent back. Here is a copy of the letter that Tattenai, the governor beyond the river, and Shethar-Bozenai and his colleagues, the lesser governors that were beyond the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent the word to him, and the writing in it was in this manner. Quote, to Darius the king, all peace. Let it become known to the king that we went to the jurisdictional district of Judah, to the house of the great God, and it is being built with stones rolled into place, and timbers are being laid in the walls, and that work is being eagerly done and is making progress in their hands. Then we asked these older men, this is what we said to them. Who put an order through to you to build this house and to finish this beam structure? And we also asked them their names, so as to let you know that we might write the names of the able-bodied men that are at their head. And this is the word that they gave back to us, saying, we are the servants of the God of the heavens and the earth, and we are rebuilding the house that had been built many years before this, which a great king of Israel built and finished. You notice they didn't give their names. However, because our fathers irritated the God of the heavens, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, and he demolished this house and took the people into exile at Babylon, an event which our chronology tells us was in the year 587 BCE, as indicated by the book of Zechariah chapter 7 verse 5, which we read 2 days ago, which said that specifically they had been mourning for 70 years at the time of the fourth year of Darius, which was 518 BCE. So 70 years inclusive takes us back to 587. But also, it's 65 years. I said 55 yesterday, until the second year of Darius, or until from 587 to 522. That is 65 years. I said 55 yesterday. That's 65 years. Okay. Nevertheless, in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, Cyrus the king put an order through to rebuild this house of God, and also the gold and the silver vessels of the house of God that Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, and brought to the temple of Babylon. These Cyrus the king took out of the temple of Babylon, and they were given to Sheshbazzar, the name of the one whom he made governor, whom we know was Zerubbabel, also called Sheshbazzar here. And he said to him, take these vessels, go, deposit them in the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt upon its place. When that Sheshbazzar came, he laid the foundations of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And from then until now, it is being rebuilt, but it has not been completed. No, it seems like they laid the foundations. When we're reading in the book of Zechariah, didn't we just read that they laid the foundations? We did, I think. But we're going to look, we'll look at that. But, and let's continue reading. And now, if to the king it seems good, let there be an investigation in the king's house of treasures that is there in Babylon, whether it is so that from Cyrus the king an order was put through to rebuild that house of God in Jerusalem, and the decision of the king concerning this, let him send to us. And they are in Jerusalem, writing to Darius, the king of the Medes, or the king of, you know, the Medo-Persians, which was one group of people ever since the days of Cyrus, after he conquered the Medes. It became the kingdom of Medes and Persians, sometimes just called the kingdom of the Medes, too, later on when it was ruled by the Medes. But Cyrus was a Persian, and he ruled that combined kingdom of Medes and Persians as the first one to rule the combined kingdom, because he'd been the one who conquered the Medes. But the conquest of Cyrus by the Medes is not actually in the Bible. That's something we find elsewhere. Zechariah 9 is today's reading in Zechariah. But I want to look at Zechariah 7. When did they build? Right, okay. Remember when they mourned? What chapter was that in? Was that in the book of Ezra? Or was that in this book? It's good to be never too sure, right? You don't want to be too sure of anything. Oh, that's interesting. Where were they mourning? It must have been Ezra, I guess. Wait a minute now. We're going to check that out, I think. I don't see it in Zechariah. Okay. Okay, let's go back. Let's go, first of all, Zechariah 9. And let's go back to our book of Ezra. Well, we'll just do it manually, I guess. Okay, so. No, this is a constant work. I mean, you know, none of my numbers in my articles, I've not found any errors in the numbers, in the arithmetic. In my articles, I've not found any errors. But I may still find some, but there are none that I know of. I may say things that are occasionally incorrect because I'm still working on the math. I'm still evaluating everything. And they've gone to, yeah, here it is, where they were weeping. in Ezra 3 and 12. That's right. Okay, there they were weeping because they laid the foundation. Yeah, okay, so that's where it's talking about the laying of the foundation. Then Ezra writes about it, but it's not during Ezra's time. It's during after the second year of their coming to the house of the true God in Ezra 3 and 8. That's when they laid the foundation, which we said is probably about 537 BCE, which is almost exactly... Wow, it's amazing. It's almost, it is exactly, perhaps exactly 70 years after the burning of the temple by Nebuchadnezzar on Av 9 of the year 587 BCE, which is sometime in the summer, Av 9, the fifth month after the spring equinox is the month of Av. So about 4 months, March, April, May, June, July. Sometime July, June or July sort of thing, I think. But anyway, that's good. Okay, so we've settled this, that the foundation of the temple was in the book of Ezra. Not it wasn't mentioned in the time of Zechariah. So it happened earlier, which is in the time of Ezra, 537, not 520, or not 518, which was the time of Zechariah's prophecy that we've been reading about. Okay, so... Zechariah 9, a pronouncement in 522 is 65 years after the temple was burned by Nebuchadnezzar. But you know what? That's the same number in the prophecy of Isaiah, 65-year prophecy of Isaiah. So we're going to have to look at that at some point to see whether that 65 years has any good correlation in the prophetic sense as it was used by Isaiah, his prophecy of 65 years, which corresponded to 719 plus 65, if I'm not mistaken. What? Yeah, 784, that eclipse of 784 BCE until the fall of Samaria in 719. That's 65 years. And that was a prophecy of Isaiah that we saw recently was fulfilled. A pronouncement, Zechariah says in verse 1 of chapter 9. The word of Jehovah is against the land of Hadrach, and Damascus is where it rests. How many verses are we reading? 17, okay. For Jehovah has an eye on earthling man and on all the tribes of Israel, and Hamath itself will also border upon her. Tyre and Sidon, for she is very wise. And Tyre proceeded to build a rampart for herself and to pile up silver like dust and gold like the mire of the streets. Look, Jehovah himself will dispossess her, and into the sea he will certainly strike down her military force. And in the fire, she herself will be devoured. We know that Tyre was eventually pitched into the sea by Alexander the Great. And he built a causeway using the rubble of the city so that he could reach out to the island city of Tyre and conquer it. So that's interesting here. There's the prophecy of Zechariah mentions that Tyre would be struck down into the sea. And Ashkelon will see, verse 5, and get afraid. And as for Gaza... Because we know Alexander the Great lived long after Zechariah, hundreds of years later, right? And as for Gaza, she will also feel very severe pains. Ekron also, because her look for hope will have to experience shame. And the king will certainly perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon herself will not be inhabited. And an illegitimate son will actually seat himself in Ashdod, and I shall certainly cut off the pride of the Philistine. And I will remove his blood-stained things from his mouth and his disgusting things from between his teeth, and he himself also will certainly be left remaining for our God. And he must become like a sheik in Judah, and Ekron like the Jebusite. And I will encamp as an outpost for my house, so that there will be no one passing through and no one returning, and there will no more pass through them a taskmaster, for now I have seen it with my eyes. Be very joyful, O daughter of Zion. Shout in triumph, O daughter of Jerusalem. This is a prophecy about the Messiah, because Jesus came riding on an ass. It says, look, your king himself comes to you. He is righteous, yes, saved, humble, and riding upon an ass, even upon a full-grown animal, the son of a she-ass. Now, Jesus knew this scripture, so he would have made sure he did ride upon an ass. And I shall certainly... cut off the war chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow must be cut off, and he will actually speak peace to the nations. And his rulership will be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. The river refers to the Euphrates River. Also, you, O woman, by the blood of your covenant, I will send your prisoners out of the pit in which there is no water. Return to the stronghold, you prisoners of the hope. Also, today I am telling you, I shall repay to you, O woman, a double portion. For I will tread as my bow Judah, the bow I will fill with Ephraim, and I will awaken your sons, O Zion, against your sons, O Greece, and I will make you as the sword of a mighty man. And over them Jehovah himself will be seen, and his arrow will certainly go forth just like lightning, and on the horn the sovereign Lord Yahweh himself will blow, and he will certainly go with the windstorms of the south. Yahweh of armies himself will defend them, and they will actually devour and subdue the sling stones, and they will certainly drink, be boisterous as if there were wine, and they will actually become filled like the bowl, like the corners of the altar. And Yahweh their God will certainly save them in that day like the flock of his people, for they will be as the stones of a diadem glittering over his soil. What an illustration. For oh, how great his goodness is, and how great his handsomeness is. Grain is what will make the young men thrive, and new wine the virgins. That's the end of Zechariah 9. It says they will drink as if there were wine. So this new wine could be something that's not even wine. It's something new. That's an interesting illustration, though, is it not? About the wine, but also about this, the stones of a diadem glittering over his soil. A diadem being a crown, something you wear on the head, and the stones being the gemstones, the precious stones embedded in the diadem. And his people will be like these gemstones in the diadem, glittering over the soil of Jehovah, which is the promised land, we would think, metaphorically, meaning not literally the land of Israel, but or Palestine, not literally, but metaphorically and illustratively, figuratively, because Jesus rules the whole earth, and all of the earth is Jehovah's soil, ultimately, when he does make Christ the King over the earth, and he makes Christ the Almighty God. He gives the crown to Jesus when he makes him King. That concludes our study for today. It's April 19th, 2024, of the Common Era. Once again, it's the year 2024 of the Common Era. And it's 1554 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And our study is concluded. I've enjoyed it very much. It's a lot of work, I must say, and a lot of concentration, a lot of prayer, because anyone can make a slip at any time. So prayer is important. It helps. And now, I love you very much, and in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.